Welcome to Piedmont Arts. I'm Rachel Stewart.
The specific wrinkles in the skin, the specific texture on the hands, the shape of the fingernails. It is so intricate. Like, every part of the sculpture was done with such care, with such precision.
That's poet Clint Smith, Davidson class of 2010, describing the newly installed sculpture With These Hands at Davidson College. More from Smith about With These Hands in just a moment. Also coming up on this week's episode of Piedmont Arts is Phil Vavra's Fanfare, as always, which will tell you about things you might want to do in the coming week. And I have a conversation later on with Kendall McGeorge of the Charlotte History Museum. She'll fill us in about the upcoming Mad About Modern home tour in Charlotte. But first, a conversation with Clint Smith. Clint Smith is an award-winning author of poetry and narrative nonfiction. He's an educator, and he's a staff writer for The Atlantic. His most recent collection of poems, Above Ground, was published in 2023. His debut poetry collection, Counting Descent, came out in 2016. Both of these received critical acclaim. How the Word is Passed, A Reckoning with the History of Slavery Across America, became a number one New York Times bestseller and won the National Book Critics Circle Award for Nonfiction, among numerous and significant accolades. Clint Smith is also an alum of Davidson College, as mentioned, class of 2010, and he returned to campus recently to deliver this year's Reynolds Lecture and to be an integral part of the dedication of Davidson's new sculpture, With These Hands, A Memorial to the Enslaved and Exploited. His poem, With These Hands, will be part of a permanent exhibition in one of the college's original buildings that will highlight Davidson's history and honor those who fired the bricks on those structures. My colleague Dan Dreher sat down with Smith when he was in town to talk about With These Hands.
Clint Smith, it's a pleasure to have some time with you today. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's so good to be here.
We'll hear your poem in just a bit, but I wondered if I could get your reaction to when you first saw the sculpture.
I had seen the designs, obviously. I'd seen the evolution of the project from afar. But when I walked up to the memorial with President Hicks, I was so struck first by the size of it. I didn't realize and maybe hadn't fully understood how big it is, and its presence is so powerfully conspicuous, and its placement in many ways at the very center of campus is such a powerful and important testament to the college's recognition of the role that enslaved hands and enslaved labor played in making this institution possible. From an artistic perspective, I just have such a admiration for the level of detail, the specific wrinkles in the skin, the specific texture on the hands, the shape of the fingernails. It is so intricate. Like, every part of the sculpture was done with such care, with such precision. It is a remarkable and powerful memorial, and I think demonstrates what memorials, monuments, iconography, the power of what these things can represent and the way that they can serve as sort of ongoing daily reminders of an institution's commitment to continuing to reflect and engage and aspire to be the best version of itself. You know, it's not a threshold you cross where you kind of wipe your hands and say, you know, we've done our work. It is a praxis. It's a way of living. It's a recognition that this is something we wake up both individually and as an institution, current students, faculty, staff, alum, to make sure that we push Davidson in the way that we push ourselves to, again, become the best, most thoughtful version of itself.
The sculpture was created by the noted artist Hank Willis Thomas in collaboration with the design firm Perkins & Will. And for those who haven't seen it, the hands are raised toward heaven, and they sit with openness. And as you say, the detail is just incredible. Bronze, so it's lit at night, so you can see it from Main Street in Davidson. As an alum of the college, what does it mean for it to be on college grounds?
I think that in a political and in a social moment where there is so much pressure on higher ed institutions to capitulate, to run away from their responsibility to tell the full and often complicated and often hard stories of its past, in a moment where many institutions are running away from their previously stated commitments, that are running away from their responsibilities. It's so heartening and reassuring and fulfilling to be an alum of an institution that has done the opposite. It would have been easy for there to be all manner of reasons and excuses to let this project fall by the wayside. And the fact that President Hicks and the task force and the board and all of the people in leadership positions, beginning with Carol Quillen, who got this ball rolling many years ago, former president of Davidson, I feel grateful to them, to their commitment. And again, my hope is that this is reflective and it is, in many ways, will be a symbol of an ongoing commitment, a way of reasserting Davidson's commitment to acknowledging its past in full, and also to thinking critically about how Davidson uses its resources, how Davidson uses its influence, how Davidson uses its power to create meaningful material interventions for people within the Davidson community who are the descendants or whom are adjacent to those who built this school, who built this property. And I think that's the next step. The next step is to ensure that this doesn't end with symbolism, that it in fact translates into meaningful, again, material interventions in people's lives that transform their lives in a direct and clear way.
May I ask you to share your poem with us?
I'd be happy to. With these hands. In 1837, the 8th president was inaugurated and the country held its breath. The price of cotton plunged and the banks began to fall. The telegraph was invented and our language took new shape, while the chains of chattel slavery still held millions in its grip. And here, surrounded by white oaks and red maples, amid the foothills of the Piedmont and within a whisper of the Catawba River, the doors of a small Carolina college opened for the first time. But it did not open these doors to all. There were those who still believed education was not meant for any woman. There were those who still believed education was not meant for those who were black. But simply because black people were not allowed into the college does not mean they did not help to build it. It was enslaved hands that dug their fingers into the river's soft soil and extracted clumps of clay. It was enslaved hands that would mold the wet earth by strength and sweat and transform it into stone. It was enslaved hands that constructed the fire to harden the stone into blocks that would encircle these grounds. Through work and force and time and blood, they produced 250,000 bricks that built this college. A school that has given rise to preachers and presidents, architects and artisans, scientists and surgeons, educators and engineers. It is through their labor that these buildings were erected. It is through their toil that this college came to be. With these hands, they cleared the land, they cut the brick, they swung the axe, they chopped the wood. With these hands, they held their love. They hugged their child, they clapped in church, they prayed for freedom. With these hands, they constructed buildings they were not allowed to enter. They cooked food they were not allowed to eat. They washed clothes they were not allowed to wear. The enslaved in Davidson were trapped in bondage, but let us not say they were defined by it. The enslaved labor is what made this college, but let us not say it is what made them. In the corners of the archives, we can find clues of who they were. The idiosyncratic elements that show us lives of people beyond the page. There are the records of birthdays and funerals, first words and final goodbyes. There are hymns sung from the pews of old churches. There are stories told from the mouths of old men. From enslavement to abolition, from Reconstruction to Jim Crow, we say their names as reminders that they were here and are not forgotten. Scipio, Hiram, Tom, Joe, Otho, Lewis, Alex, Aaron, Jack, Jim, Holdsclaw, Sid, Lizzie, Amy, Susan, Priscilla. There are so many names whose fingerprints remain along these walls, and so many names of men, women, and children we'll never know. There is no way to understand Davidson without understanding all of its history, all that we should be proud of, and that for which we should make amends. We are a school that reflects the contradictions of this country, the cognitive dissonance of a land that is both given and taken away. Black students study in buildings that are named after enslavers and walk past fraternities who have flown the Confederate flag. The first three presidents of this school each owned other human beings, and it took 129 years before the first black student received a degree. We cannot run from this part of our story. We must wake up and face it every day. It is not a finish line we cross, but a new way of living out our aspirations, of demanding we become the place we tell the world we want to be. So here we stand, between oak and elm, between stone and brick, between truth and honor, between past and present. Here we stand, between Hiram's wide smile and Scipio's sweet songs, between Susan's small hands and Lizzie's big laugh. With their hands, this place was made, and with our voices, we shall remember.
Among the many powerful words in your poem, I was particularly drawn to when you say the names. It's critical, isn't it, to say the names?
I think so. I think it's important for these folks not to be abstractions from the archive. I think it's important for us to name them because it renders them three-dimensional. It renders them more human. It renders them more proximate. And when you take something from the realm of abstraction and make it real to someone, bring it alive to someone, I think the moral urgency and the stakes feel different. You're not talking simply about an amorphous group of people. You're talking about a man, a woman, a child who had relationships, who had dreams, who had fears, who held their head in a certain way, who sang songs with a particular cadence, who laughed with a particular sort of joy. And thank you, thanks to the work of the archivists and historians here at Davidson, we have access to these names and these stories in ways that we previously didn't. And I think that that's such a powerful and important thing, and I wanted to invoke those names directly in this poem.
This sculpture, and of course the college's intent in commissioning it, is meant to acknowledge Davidson's past, to learn from it through, as we've been talking about, the ongoing scholarship and the research that is to come, and in the words of the college's leadership, to build a present and a future. How can sculpture and people's interactions with it, how can this sculpture do that, do just that?
I think every day when someone walks past this sculpture, it is a reminder of the fact that you are part of an institution, or you attend an institution, or you live near an institution that has made a decision to be honest about and to confront a part of its past that many others have been unwilling to confront. And I think what I hope it does is that it signals something within all of us. It elicits something in all of our consciousness that makes it so that we go on to expect and work toward that sort of accountability in every realm of our lives, both in the ways that in our individual lives, in the ways that we hold ourselves to account for things that we've done in our lives that maybe we're not proud of, or mistakes that we've made, things we wish we could have done better, and to remember that it doesn't have to end with our regrets, but instead you can make amends, you can do better, you can learn, use those moments as an opportunity to become a better, more thoughtful, more empathic version of yourself. And then my hope is that it also pushes folks to demand this of other places that they're a part of. You know, what if Davidson is doing this, why shouldn't every institution in this country, why shouldn't every workplace in this country, why shouldn't every other school in this country, why shouldn't, and I hope it can serve as a source of inspiration and motivation to many people to say, this place with this history is not running from it, but is naming it, is confronting it, and is engaged in the ongoing, again, keyword, ongoing work, because that work never ends, of figuring out how to, day by day, step by step, get closer and hold itself account to what it says it wants to be. And shouldn't that be how we all live? Shouldn't we all wake up every day and try to get a little bit closer to the version of ourselves that we want to be? Some days there might be a few steps back. Some days we might not get there as quickly as we hope. But the intent, as long as the intent is to get a little bit closer, that is what I think of when I see this statue. And that's what I hope other people think of as well.
Clint Smith, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Poet and author Clint Smith, Davidson class of 2010, talking to Dan Dreher. You can learn more about With These Hands by going to the Davidson College website. Are you looking for something interesting to do with your time? Well, here's Phil Vavra with a few ideas.
Thanks, Rachel. Plenty of interesting things to see and do over the next week, from a new way to enjoy Beethoven and a production of Pagliacci to a day of astronomy and a train ride to the North Pole. Let's fanfare. Experience the music of Ludwig von Beethoven with a different perspective when the Charlotte Symphony Orchestra presents Beethoven 360 at Booth Playhouse in Charlotte, November 7th and 8th. You'll be seated around the orchestra, enabling you to see conductor Christopher James Lees and the musicians more closely than ever. The theatrical program includes Beethoven's variation on La Ci Darem la Mano from Don Giovanni, selections from the Symphony No. 7 and the full Symphony No. 8. The Polar Express train ride returns to the North Carolina Transportation Museum in Spencer on select days, November 7th through December 23rd. Set to the sounds of the motion picture soundtrack, passengers will enjoy a journey to the North Pole, complete with hot chocolate and cookies served on board the train, a reading of Chris Van Allsburg's beloved story, The Polar Express, a Santa sighting, and a souvenir sleigh bell. Kids of all ages are even invited to come dressed in their pajamas. Then there's The Killer Clown. No, it's not another Stephen King movie. Piedmont Opera is bringing an immersive production of Pagliacci to the Millennium Events Center in Winston-Salem, November 8th, 9th, and 11th. The opera will take over the entire space, removing the separation between the stage and seats, so the audience and building become part of the unfolding drama. Explore the wonders of astronomy and the night sky at Davidson Space Day, Saturday, November 8th, on the campus of Davidson College. The event begins with an interactive astronomy fair, followed by a public lecture with NASA Solar System Ambassador Dr. Deborah Lester. And after the sun goes down, it'll be time for some stargazing on the chamber's lawn. Admission is free. Appalachian Arts presents Cirque Calabante, Afrique en Cirque, at the Schaefer Center for the Performing Arts on Wednesday, November 12th at 7:30 p.m. Inspired by daily life in Guinea, Afrique en Cirque shares the beauty, youth, and artistry of African culture through music and gravity-defying acrobatics. And the Southern Christmas Show returns to the Park Expo and Conference Center in Charlotte, November 13th through 23rd. There's Christmas Tree Lane, the Old Town Shopping Village, Tiny Trains, Visits with Santa, and hundreds of artisans, crafters, and vendors. It's a great way to get a lot of holiday shopping done in one place. Pro tip, don't go home without a box or 12 of Helmut's Strudel. You can read about even more sounds, sights, and bites on my complete fanfare column at WDAV.org. Have a fun week. Rachel?
Thank you, Phil. Those of us who grew up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s may have taken for granted the sleek lines and minimalism of the architecture of the time. The ranch houses many of us were raised in were just ordinary livable homes designed for the average American family. All these years later, there's a reason people of all generations still gravitate to mid-century modern architecture and design. It's a blend of simplicity and functionality that feels scaled for humans. The Charlotte History Museum's annual Mad About Modern Mid-Century and Modern Home Tour is happening on November 8th, and some of Charlotte's finest mid-century modern homes are going to be on the itinerary. And here to talk about it is Kendall McGeorge, who is the Charlotte History Museum's Public Programs Manager. It's good to see you, Kendall.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
How long has this been happening, this tour?
This is the 14th year, and it is also the final year for Mad About Modern in this context. The plan is to eventually bring it back in kind of a different way, but next year is America 250, so we're going to really focus on that. We have a new exciting exhibit coming.
Well, can you give us a little background then on the tour that is happening this year and why it was started? And
yeah, so it was originally started by a group called Historic Charlotte. They were an organization passionate about preservation in the city. At some point, I don't know the exact year off the top of my head, the Charlotte Museum of History, we absorbed them. And with that, we got Mad About Modern. And one of our main parts of our mission statement is saving and sharing Charlotte's history. We are passionate about preservation. We have 5 historic structures just on our site. So this is a way that we are able to go out into the community, tell people about these homes, talk to people about why they are important, why they need to be saved, because they are getting to that point where they can reach historic landmark status.
So what are some of the reasons that you would tell people as to why they're important and why we should save them?
I mean, they're a time capsule. That's kind of like the point of mid-century homes. They tell a different version of Charlotte's history. Like when you're looking at a Myers Park house, it is totally different than a Cotswold. So they're all just like different kinds of homes, but like the sleek lines, the inside outside, I think it's just like a really cool architectural style that should be saved.
I'm guessing are too young to have like been around when this architecture was sort of considered the new latest thing. As somebody who, unlike me, who maybe didn't grow up in that period, what is that architecture from that time? How does it speak to you as somebody who's not from that time?
I have always kind of liked these houses. It's never been like something before I started working here that I really thought too much about, honestly. But I think that they're all just like individual. Every single one has similar aspects to them, but they're like individual homes. Nothing is cookie cutter looking the exact same as your neighbor's house, which I think is like one of my favorite parts of them.
How many homes are on the tour this year?
There's 3 this year.
And can you give us a brief description of them?
Yeah, so one is a true mid-century modern home. So it was built in 1972, and it's in the McClintock Woods neighborhood. It's one of those like picturesque mid-century homes. It has the like kind of open layout to it. It has a huge backyard with a Japanese maple that was most likely planted by the original owner, which is pretty cool. So that one I'm pretty excited about. And then we have 2 modern homes, but both of them are based off of mid-century designs.
So they were built more recently?
Right. So one, our Mecklenburg Avenue home was built in 2024. So it's definitely the newest one on the tour. It is probably, honestly, to me, one of the coolest homes that we have had on this tour. It's very open, spacious. They were very eco-friendly in the way that they wanted their home to be laid out. They really wanted that indoor-outdoor kind of thing. They have, like, this really cool patio that has a screen that comes up and down. It's one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
So what kind of screen is it?
It's just like a patio door screen, but it goes all the way across one wall. So then they can like open up the doors, like their sliding doors, and have people inside or outside or enjoy the outside while they're inside, which I just think is really fun. And then the last one was built in 2001, and that is in the Mallard Creek area. So it was built by the homeowners. Their hands built this home. I describe it to people as like a treehouse. You kind of feel like you're in the woods when you're inside of it. It's very all wood, big glass windows up the sides of the home. Just very fun one to go see.
Is there any concern that houses from this era are being torn down too much? You know, Charlotte is famous for keeping something for a while and then deciding that they're going to move on to the next thing. And so a lot of historic buildings over time have disappeared. Mm-hmm. And I wonder about the houses from this era. A lot of them are not quite as big as people build these days.
So they're usually on a big lot, but not huge homes. So we have seen a few that have been torn down in the recent years or bought and totally redone. But I think that's part of the importance of like us having this tour. Like, yes, it is the final year, but that doesn't mean that we're going to totally ignore mid-century modern homes in the future when we bring something similar back. So I think just by us having however many people, maybe about 600 people on this tour coming to see these homes, it just kind of shines a light on them.
Do you have any idea what it'll look like when it comes back?
Yes, we're very early on in conception. When and if it comes back, we are planning on doing an expansion of it. So instead of just focusing on one era of homes, we're going to focus on all homes from Charlotte's past. That way we can kind of tell the story of Charlotte through its homes.
Do you feel like this does help preserve these buildings and keep them
alive? I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think we have there's a loyal audience with this and people who are very much fans of these homes, and they are fierce.
I know you're not in the Landmarks Commission. I know you're not part of the Landmarks Commission,
yeah.
But are these homes old enough now to get designated status?
Yep, they have just reached the age where they're old enough.
What is that age?
I believe it's around 70 years, 70 to 80 years.
Okay, so it's actually some of them, if they were built in the 60s, they're not there yet. But
they're not quite there yet, but the earlier ones are there.
Yeah. Well, what else should people know about this tour? How do they get tickets or participate? How does it work?
Yeah, so you can buy tickets. They're $35 on the Charlotte Museum of History's website. It's just charlottemuseum.org. If you go to our programs and events page, you will see the button that takes you to Mad About Modern. The night before, everybody will get their addresses that they can go to, and then they can plan from there. You'll check in at the homes, and then it's a self-guided tour from there.
Kendall McGeorge from Charlotte History Museum, thank you very much for talking to us.
Of course. Thank you.
That's it for this week's Piedmont Arts. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you can get all our episodes as they come out and stay informed about what's happening in arts and culture in the Charlotte region. I'm Rachel Stewart.